What's up, you guys? Sean Rossap, Fightful Select's Backstage Report Podcast. Let's go ahead. Let's talk about what we got. Big changes on the Friday episode of SmackDown, but this was not like a Vince McMahon change or anything like that. It was unfortunate. LA Knight got COVID. They tested him right before the show, and he tested positive. He had to leave the venue. I don't know. I had somebody ask. It was good mic work, Greg, a good friend of the show. Like, in that sense, does he go back to the hotel? Does he fly with other people? Well, I mean, he was less than 6 hours from home. Could have been a drive. Could have had somebody drive him. Any number of those things. But either way, Knight was set to be revealed as John Cena's partner for WWE Fastlane before being sidelined. The angle that happened on SmackDown played out pretty much how it was going to play out, just without LA Knight making the save. He was supposed to come out there and save John Cena from the beatdown. I don't know how that's going to play out now that we are a few days removed from that segment having to be scrapped, but I guess we'll see. Luke Gallows, he's been absent from TV of late. He was not on SmackDown on September 22nd, where Mia Yim and Carl Anderson were shown tending to AJ Styles. He had to get his knee scoped. He was expected to miss 6 weeks. I don't know if that's from when he got it scoped or 6 weeks from now, but he's sidelined. We hope that he gets well soon. Randy Orton, man, he has been at the Performance Center. No other way to put it. He's been at the Performance Center. He's trying to prepare for a return. This is something that nobody can get out of. Cody had told me this before one of our interviews. He tried to get out of the Performance Center check-in. However, it was even enforced for guys like The Undertaker. You got to go there. You got to show that you're healthy. You got to show that you're good to go. All that stuff. And he's been there. His bus has been there for quite some time. But this is something that every talent has to go through, so we are nearing, hopefully, a Randy Orton return. Now, Randy has missed a year and a half, almost. Matt Riddle was released, who was his most recent partner. That's the most recent we saw him. But he's been around for quite some time. I had been told around SummerSlam he'd gotten huge in a good way, but that he was not cleared. He was lifting weights and all that stuff, but he was not in ring or anything like that. WWE actually confirmed this to me, because when they saw the incorrect rumors of Randy Orton at SummerSlam, they were like, we don't want to set unrealistic expectations, so we're going to go ahead and confirm that report that you put out a few days before that. So, he's finally back in the fold, at least as far as in the ring and all that. Sheamus, unfortunately, not back into the fold. He has a shoulder injury that he's been dealing with per Wrestling Observer, but we had reported last week his contract is up likely early 2024, which now is likely to be extended as a result of that. Sheamus, of course, won the Royal Rumble, King of the Ring, Money in the Bank, 4 world titles, 46 years old, but he's one of those guys that probably still has a few years in him after they thought that he might have to retire well before they had anticipated, and now he's really turned it around and doing incredible work. We hope that he heals up and gets better soon. But regardless of all that, he would be a prime name to have for any company. I mean, especially a place like New Japan, but AEW making appearances there. 4-time former world champion, guy who competed for the world title at WrestleMania. Again, he's won all those things that I mentioned, King of the Ring, Rumble, Money in the Bank. They have trusted him in any number of roles in WWE. And he's decorated. He's, you know, pretty well liked. And that would be a big one. Unfortunately, WWE releases happened last week. There was some frustration among members of the roster we spoke to that WWE announced a $1.4 billion SmackDown deal and then cut talent. Not only that, it was like a $400 million increase that, you know, completely swallowed whatever cost there would be of talent. One top star said it was a list that of people that barely got featured on TV, couldn't get booked, and it was a circle that couldn't really be escaped because they can't get over if they're not booked. Another brought up the company released Emma right after WWE Elimination Chamber was announced for her home country. And the line of thinking from many on the roster is that WWE aligned these cuts with the announcements of Elimination Chamber and the TV deal for SmackDown to minimize the impact that it would have in whatever mainstream media that they could cover, or any, you know, any outlets that typically don't give WWE coverage. Most of the main roster deals, that does include Mustafa Ali and Dana Brooke, have 90-day non-competes attached to them. And some of the NXT ones have 30 days. Several talents that we spoke to had even thought the days of mass cuts were behind them and that deals would simply be allowed to expire like in AEW. They had appeared to be the method of late, at least. So we learned an awful lot about these releases. Dolph Ziggler, we were actually going to report this week an update on his brother Ryan Nemeth posting them with a bunch of AEW titles, etc., etc. His deal was supposed to be up in June of 2024. And he had been open to leaving the company, was the rumor, about four or five years ago, and got talked into staying, got a really, really good deal. And you know, now he's been with WWE for almost 20 years until they finally released him this past week. He is 43 years old, but can still very clearly go in the ring. Again, 19 years he was in the company since 2004. They brought him in, and man, by like I think 2005, he was on TV with Chavo Guerrero. So he's been on TV for the better part of 18 years. Good for him. What a run. Aaliyah was one that did not surprise the people that I spoke to. She had been with the company for about 8 years, and WWE did not feel as if she had progressed in the ring to the level in which they were hoping. She was brought up to SmackDown in kind of a sink or swim situation in 2021, but then when they took the tag titles off of her, they just never factored her back in. Anytime I'd ask for an update, I was told that she wasn't injured. Mustafa Ali asked for his release back in 2021, but it was quickly rejected and he was taken off of TV. I was told that he was asked to do something by Vince McMahon that he would never do on TV. And the relationship there wasn't great, even though in the past, Vince had really trusted Mustafa Ali with his own promos and all that. Now, you got a bunch of people that are like, yeah, well, he asked for his release. He asked for his release. I hope to God that your mind never changes in 2 years. That was 2 years ago. 2 years ago. People I talked to in NXT were also not happy about the way that this all unfolded. They had no knowledge that he was going to be released and had even worked through an injury to make his NXT run happen. Elias had not been on TV in quite some time. We're told he hadn't been injured of late because he was still pitching ideas as of a month ago. Vince was a bigger fan of, I believe, the Ezekiel character. And I believe that Triple H liked Elias, or it's one or the other. I had heard that one of them liked one particular character more than the other one, and neither one of them are on TV. Rick Boogs says that Vince McMahon being ousted is what led to him not being on TV. If that were true, that wouldn't be the only one. Shanky was never brought up in a creative sense once Triple H took over creative. The company did want him to perform in India recently, but there were no plans for him to return other than that. It was another situation of the company feeling as if the progression in the ring wasn't there. Quincy Elliott, who I accidentally called Quincy Miller about three times this week, that's a former NBA player, was one that just didn't surprise anybody in WWE either. There were a lot of headaches caused by Quincy, especially on social media, that were going to result in some sort of D-push. What kind of D-push can you have when you're barely on TV? But any number of things that got Quincy heat in the company, and that definitely didn't help out Quincy at all. Riddick Moss had been a favorite of Paul Heyman's when he was running the show, was someone that Heyman felt like they could get to the main event level, but other people in the company didn't feel that way, and the Madcap Moss thing definitely didn't help him, especially in the long run. Riddle. So there were rumors that Riddle was supposed to be at SmackDown last week. He was never booked or supposed to appear at SmackDown last week. And this is a hunch, this isn't a report, I halfway think this one was completely separate, because I had asked people in WWE Thursday night, hey, are these releases supposed to continue until tomorrow? And they're like, no, they're not. And then Riddle got fired the next day. That would lead me to believe they found out something about the allegations at JFK Airport, where he claimed that an officer there sexually assaulted him, leading to an internal investigation by the Port Authority. Riddle was one of those people who caused a lot of problems for WWE outside of work. But then when he was at work, they didn't really have a lot of issues with him. Like, he would show up and he would do his job and he got along with most people. I had heard that he was easy to deal with in that sense. But then, you know, outside of his work hours, he's going wild all the time. The constant stuff that would keep getting brought up. He was not factored into creative plans after the Port Authority thing either. Ari Emanuel, Vince McMahon, Triple H, and Nick Khan held a staff meeting in Stamford last week after the staff firings. Executive Chairman Brad Bloom was also there. Vince referred to Ari as his boss. Ari mentioned his daughter Ashley worked for WWE. Vince said the company had plateaued or stagnated and the merger needed to happen to take the company to the next level. This comment gained a lot of eye rolls and reactions within the company, who pointed out WWE had been touting record numbers since Vince left. The comment led to many to reaffirm their beliefs that Vince just did this deal so he could get back into the company. Ari said they've had a long relationship with WWE and he's looked to Vince McMahon for help and advice in the past. There were talk of the cuts and said it was unfortunate, but it had to happen. And regarding the note that one employee had told another wrestling site that massive layoffs wouldn't have happened under under Stephanie McMahon's watch, we had several current and former employees reach out regarding that. They all noted that while Stephanie was beloved in the office, not only could and would it still have happened, her team got dismantled right in front of her. So that's not something that would have prevented anything. There were some big changes to WWE Raw. Becky Lynch was supposed to face Tegan Nox for the NXT Championship, and that was switched. Tegan Nox was taken off of that, a spot that Becky pushed for, by the way. And it was switched to Natalya. Natalya, we had mentioned last week in a report, had gotten really high marks from WWE for stepping up in India. But Becky had pushed for that, and this didn't change until like 10 minutes before doors. AEW and MLW veteran Danny Limelight worked WWE Raw as an extra. Rhea Ripley was back home in Australia and had time off. The match order was swapped. Kofi and Ivar, Ricochet and Nakamura got switched. Kofi and Ivar got very high marks, as you would expect. Both Nick Aldis and Robert Roode had individual producing assignments on the main event tapings. They'd been shadowing people of late. JD McDonough is still listed separate from the Judgment Day. Zaya Lee came back, wrestled her first match since July 31st. She hasn't appeared on a live event, pay-per-view, or TV show besides main event since March 23rd. And as we had reported, Australia pay-per-view, February 2024, that got announced over the past week. So good news there. Johnny Gargano was at WWE HQ this week, though we have not been told what for. Johnny hasn't been on TV in months, but has been filming some stuff with WWE of late. The original dark match for post-SmackDown was LA Knight and John Cena versus the Street Profits. That had to be axed, and it was John Cena versus Montez. The November 15th episode of Dynamite is slated for the Toyota Arena in Ontario, California. Per the terms of WWE's deals with the venues, they can't actually promote that episode of Dynamite there until tonight's Raw emanates from that same arena. Eddie Kingston spoke to Cam Hawkins for a new interview with Fightful. He says that he hears the criticisms of his physique and all that, but nobody knows the work that he puts in and the things that he does to make sure that he is ready. He said that Ethan Page is on his radar the most as an ROH champion as well. Definitely encourage you guys to check out that interview. Joel Pearl also spoke with Matt Taven, who has been exploding in AEW as a result of this Roderick Strong and Adam Cole angle. Talked about getting jeered, talked about Madison Square Garden, talked about a lot of those things, how he even had to explain to his mom that getting booed in wrestling is a very, very good thing. But he also talked about his Impact run, and he said that nothing in wrestling is really planned, and we didn't know what tomorrow would bring during that period, but he said that the Impact locker room was one of the best he's ever experienced as well. That one is another really, really fun interview. Tall Paul. We spoke with Tall Paul White. Tempest asked him about all his face and heel turns and all that stuff, and he says he prefers working as a heel there. But he would give advice to giants these days to tap into the crowd's presence and the psychology of things as opposed to moves, and then one will follow the other as well. He said that one of his favorite turns was on John Cena, and he would have to ask on a regular basis if he needed to smile on any particular week. Going back to the spot about him talking about how moves will kind of come to you, he said smaller guys will just come up with spots for you if they trust you. So to kind of lean on that as well. A lot more AEW news. John Moxley, Adam Cole both got hurt this past week. I was told that John Moxley got hurt before the pile driver spot, but that obviously was not supposed to happen that way. It changed the end of the match. He communicated to numerous people that he feels okay after the match, but it did change plans. We're going to have more on that this week on Select. But, you know, that did not look good. It did not end up good. Tony Khan and the BCC were checking on him afterwards. I saw some very, very weird discourse where people were like, oh my God, Tony Khan was out there dancing instead of checking on Moxley. He had already checked on Moxley. He had already done that. So that was very, very weird. And please be normal on the World Wide Web. Adam Cole sustained an injury jumping to ringside, limped around following that, including backstage. He was in obvious pain and taken to the hospital, but he left. He was on crutches. He's not expected to miss much time, if any. Already has matches planned. He's set for a DPW in November. I think he's technically slated for this weekend as well. So hopefully everything's all good there. Santana and Ortiz began a feud at AEW Rampage Grand Slam, which will play off of and hopefully pay off any real-life issues they have, which they do have real-life issues. However, these two agreed to work with each other. I think they both realized it was probably best for them, and if they don't like each other, well, whoop-de-doo. They can still work together and make an interesting story out of it. Ortiz and Eddie Kingston both no longer saw eye-to-eye with Santana dating back to early 2022, and Eddie Kingston has still been verbal about it since Santana's return, but was also, you know, showing up and working with him. They kicked off the feud after they legitimately grew apart, but they didn't want to team together anymore, as best I know, and they had come to this agreement by the time those tweets went out, because AEW is, you know, being particular about how they handle their social media anymore. So if they wouldn't have been approved for that, it would not have went over well for them within the company, because there were a lot of people that were like, man, these are like pro wrestling promos. And then I was told, yep, they're working together. They're doing that. Finally, Sami Callihan's contract is up this week with Impact Wrestling. He has been there for quite some time. He's been an Impact World Champion. And by Sunday, his deal will be up. So it won't be up Saturday in time for Collision. But once Sunday rolls around, he will be available to go anywhere unless a deal is reached for him to extend and stay there. There is interest from other companies, including producer roles. He runs Pro Wrestling Revolver and runs it very well. It's one of the top indies in the country, so it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him get looks in that regard as well, but he's still just 36 years old. He's shown that he's willing to get into great shape as he did last year, but he is an interesting name that is emerging on the free agent market, and one that I'm kind of surprised that Impact hasn't already come to terms with. They seem very eager to at least keep some of their top talent, but you know, who knows how Impact Wrestling is going to handle things in this current wrestling landscape when AEW and WWE are about to have a lot more money to deal with. Guys, thank you all so much. I am headed up to Cincinnati tonight for the Cincinnati Bengals game against the LA Rams on Monday Night Football, so I will not be around for the WWE Raw review tonight, so Sour Graps will be on the main feed. I will probably do a short review here on Fightful Select for you guys, though, so whenever I miss a show like that, I like to come through and do my own review, so to speak. That way you guys get a little bit more for your $5. We're looking at expanding Fightful Select and doing some more cool different content and all that kind of stuff. And we're looking at doing annual memberships as well. We don't know what kind of discount that'll provide, but it will provide some sort of one. But stay tuned, guys. Thank you all so much. We're out.